Chris Middleton hit that three a moment ago. He has nine. Bobby Portis for Middleton. The Bucks busting out. Forbes deep enough. He hits it. Giannis spins. Lays it in.
The NBA's reigning MVP, no less. Some ESPN highlights from when the Milwaukee Bucks played the Miami Heat last week in regular season. We're talking about the Bucks opening the playoffs tomorrow afternoon against the Heat at Pfizer Forum. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. So how will the Bucks do in the playoffs? How is Giannis looking? Will the Bucks find success? 800-642-1234. Justice Cleveland is sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Justice, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
Well, good morning. You know, the Bucks, they just played the Heat last Saturday. Is it good to have a fresh win against the Heat, or what are you thinking?
I think so. I mean, it's a different team the Heat are without Jimmy Butler, but to have that confidence of coming in and having just beat that team a week ago, it's got to help. And for scouting-wise and just getting ready for the game, having just played them, for the players-wise, I think it's got to be good too.
Well, how are the Bucks looking? What do you think?
They're a different team than they were last year. I think they added different pieces this year to kind of change the depth up a little bit. Jrue Holiday was a great addition, and he's really made a difference. Every team has to have their big three, and the big three for the Bucks is Giannis, Chris Middleton, and Jrue Holiday. And I think Jrue Holiday's brought a leadership that they didn't have last year. So even though they have 10 less wins than they had last year at this point, I still think they're maybe more of a complete team than they were last year, depth-wise and just leadership-wise.
Yeah, so you really think Jrue Holiday is really melding with this team? I mean, that was a high price to pay.
It was. They gave up some to get him, but I think Holiday, not only on the court, but off the court with what he's done as well in the community of Milwaukee, has just endeared himself to the franchise, and they signed him to an extension during the season because they want him as a part of the franchise, and he's done it, like I said, both ways. When you can contribute on the court like he has, and when he was out with COVID at the beginning of the season, you could tell it was a different team. Once he got back out there, they really started kind of clicking, and it was alluded to earlier, it was an experimental season for the Bucks. They were trying a bunch of different things, and I think they really kind of got their groove towards the end of the season, and that's what you want going into the playoffs.
I would imagine how they're still really feeling this half century of not having that NBA championship. And on this, you know, 50-year anniversary, that must also kind of weigh in their minds.
Oh, definitely. I think Milwaukee Bucks obviously have had a long history. And yes, you have that title. But in between that, there's been good teams. But I think with Giannis, this is the chance they have to have a great team again. And I think oddly, I think the Bucks are flying under the radar more this year because they weren't the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. So, and there's been so many high-priced free agency signings in other teams in the Eastern Conference. The Jets are the one I look at the most, with adding Durant, Kyrie Irving, and then getting a trade for James Harden as well. But the Bucks, I think, are in a good position to make a run this playoffs because they have Giannis, and Giannis is a once-in-a-generational player. And I think you don't want to waste that. And I think that's what the Bucks are looking at now that they have him signed long term.
We're talking with Justice Cleveland about tomorrow afternoon's playoff game between the Bucks and the Heat. Justice is sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Will you be watching tomorrow afternoon's playoff game or following the Bucks through the playoffs? Who is your favorite player, and how do you feel Giannis is doing this season? 800-642-1234. Justice, you know, you call him once in a generation. Very few players in league history with the skills and the body type of Giannis, nearly 7 feet tall. How is this shooting season? How is he looking?
He's looking good. I mean, he's started opening up the three-point shooting as well, which just adds another dimension to him. Scoring 28 points a game. He's right there. I mean, his numbers weren't what they were the last 2 years, but maybe he was trying to do too much as far as scoring the last couple of years. And I think this year he's kind of let it spread out a little bit. But defensively, he's still one of the best in the league. And rebounding, I mean, like you said, I mean, with that body build that he has and how athletic he is, he can get to the ball almost better than anybody. I mean, you watch him run down the court, and it takes him like three steps, it feels like, from half court to the hoop.
Yep.
And how do you stop that? There really isn't much of a way to stop that. So I think he continues to grow as a player, because I mean, we forget that he's only 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a young player still. So he's still got a lot of basketball ahead of him, and he's just continuing to grow his basketball IQ.
Well, you know, you have to also say it's going to be harder to get to the basket as the competition gets harder in the playoffs. Can the Bucks make those shots over the top of the defense?
That's a good question. I mean, that's the Bucks have the problem for the Bucks is that when they go cold, they tend to go really cold at times shooting wise. So yeah, and a lot of these teams, if they do run into the Nets, if they can get, you don't want to look past the Heat, but if they run into the Nets or something like that, they have complete scoring and guys who can get 30 points all around. I think the Bucks do have that, but not to the point of the superstars that some of those teams have. So I think a lot of it will go down to their defense. And I think this year we saw them give up more points at times than they normally would, trying to play maybe a more up-tempo offense. But I think once you get to the playoffs, this is a team that was the best defensive team last year, and I think they still have enough of those parts to do that again here in the playoffs.
Well, let's look at some other new additions this year. Bryn Forbes and Bobby Portis. Bryn is 6'2", third season. Bobby is 6'10", drafted into the NBA in 2015. What are you seeing out of these players?
I think this is what has helped the Bucks this year is the depth and the effective depth, like guys like Forbes and Portis. I mean, if you have a veteran guy like Portis, so I'm veteran, he's 25, but that's the NBA.
Relatively
and
speaking.
Forbes, right, exactly. And Bryn Forbes is 27. So these are guys that have played plenty of games in the NBA, and I think that gives them really kind of more of an X factor off the bench than they really didn't have last year. So I think you add that, and then the growing of like a Dante DiVincenzo and a Pat Connaughton, these guys who are a little bit younger but now have, had a couple seasons under their belts. It's really shown that I think depth-wise, the Bucks are in better position than they were last year.
What about pacing? Will they be able to pace themselves in these games and not, get overzealous in the beginning or not have it at the end?
That's the million-dollar question with a lot of these teams, is that they can come out of the gates, and the Bucks have done this a few times this year, where they'll have a 20-point lead at half,
mm-hmm.
and then somehow in the second half, it manages to whittle away. The old saying is everybody makes a run in the NBA. It's just, can you survive those runs? And I think having played a lot of those games this year, the Bucks are set up as a team-wise. They have the talent to do it. I think a lot of that sometimes is just mental and just not, getting to the point where you're pressing. It'll be interesting to see, definitely against Miami, because this is a Heat team that obviously they have history with last year. Do they start to panic and thinking the same thing is going to happen with happened to them losing in the playoff series last year?
Yeah.
That's the mental aspect of the game.
Justice Cleveland is with us, sports director at WEAU in Eau Claire. Are you thinking back to when the Bucks won the NBA championship in 71, 50 years ago? Where were you? How will the Bucks do against the Heat in the first round playoffs? Join in your thoughts, 800-642-1234, and how the Bucks are looking to you. Back in a minute with Justice Cleveland here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the Bucks' playoff drive against Miami Heat in the first round. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Here's Giannis last September, Game 4, sidelined with a twisted ankle against Miami, courtesy ESPN.
Giannis Antetokounmpo limping heavily when he went back to the Bucks bench, but then came out to shoot the free throws because if he did not shoot these free throws because of the injury, he would not be allowed to return to the game.
Are you a fan of the Bucks? What do you think of their recent success? Have you been able to see the Bucks at Pfizer Forum? What challenges will they face with the Heat? Join in at 800-642-1234. We have WEAU TV Sports Director Justice Cleveland giving us a preview, and he stays with us. So, Justice, Pfizer Forum, what will conditions be like? What do you know about the facility itself in the pandemic?
Well, they're increasing capacity, which for the Bucks is a great thing to just have fans in there. And yeah, I mean, compared to last year when you're playing in a bubble and, you know, playing with banners around and virtual screens and all that fun stuff, I think this is going to be a much better performance here for the Bucks, a place to perform compared to what it was last year. So I think they're going to embrace whatever you can have. Obviously, you know, it started out little and it's continued to open up. And I think the NBA has kind of had the most unique look at this because they started this season basically playing to nobody. And now, you know, 5 months later, we're opening things up more and more. So I think for the Bucks that bodes well, because I think, you know, you're playing, it was such probably a stale aesthetic for them to play in last year and, yeah, and trying to get pumped for playoff games. To have fans back will be great for them.
Yeah, and a little home field advantage, just having that feeling again just must be so nice for these players. I can't imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. I mean, to kind of get back to maybe, you know, we all talk about trying to get back to normal. For these players, playing in front of empty stadiums for the last almost now, we're looking at 9 months, because if you go back to the end of last year and then the beginning of this year. So now to get that feeling of hey, we're kind of back to something normal, I think it's mentally it's got to be you know, better for them.
Well, I want to pick your brain about the national anthem. There's this bill in the legislature that would require the national anthem to be played at sports venues, including Pfizer Forum. Will the national anthem be played at tomorrow's game and throughout the playoff series?
I would have to imagine it would be. I mean, as somebody who goes to multiple sporting events a week. I mean, I don't know. One year I wanted to try to keep track of how many times I heard the national anthem, just to, you know, try to see how many times. So I got to imagine you will, just because it's funny because the bill's out there, but it's like if you go to a sporting event, you're almost always going to hear it no matter what. So I don't know if it, you know, the pomp and circumstance that goes with that bill being passed, but I got to imagine you would.
All right, so looking back at regular season, you know, what have you seen? This, you know, the Bucks basically squeezed in 74 games. What did they look like in regular season to you?
I think they were a team that was trying to build towards something. You saw them trying a lot of different combinations. Defensively, they were trying different things as well. I think this was a team that looked at their failures of the last 2 years to get to the title game and said, we got to try something different. And obviously they added new pieces as well. So this is a team that was kind of, you know, experimenting while the season's going on. And this season, I mean, it was a blur to squeeze in that many games. And I think they played 5 games in the last week of the regular season, which is almost unheard of when it comes to the NBA basketball. So that, you know, it wasn't a lot of breaks. So I think maybe the playoffs will be an easier thing, because at least, you know, the structure and you're going forward, you know when your games would be. Not that you didn't during the regular season, but I think you'll have a way to kind of pace yourself a little better, because you know you need to win this game, you need to win this game, you need to win this game. Whereas in the regular season, a lot of it is just trying to get through it healthy.
Yeah, well, I was going to ask you about healthy. Is the team looking healthy right now? Are there any injuries?
Well, the biggest thing is that, you know, Giannis here and there has had, you know, as he had last year, you know, had an ankle injury this year, and that's the guy that you want. Obviously, you need him,
yeah,
no matter what. I mean, we saw at the end of that playoff series last year, he wasn't able to get out on the floor and really be effective. So he's the difference maker. I think they can compete without Giannis against the Heat, but I think he's the one who puts them over the top. So, I mean, that's been the biggest one. They had injuries during the season. I think I mentioned before, Drew Holiday missing time was big, but since he's been back and has been healthy, that they're at the right time right now with their health as they enter the playoffs.
Yeah, how does Giannis handle pressure? I mean, this is a team that absolutely needs him. He is singular to their formula.
I think he handles it well. I think he's very much, in the last couple of years, realized that games have to go through him. He has to be. Now, he doesn't want to do everything, but he's the facilitator. He's the guy that, you know, teams are going to be keying on. He's the guy that sets the tempo for the team. So I think he handled it well. It seems like when you watch him out there, he ramps up the intensity, but he also can be very loose and have fun. And I think that's one of the things that he kind of prides himself on is going out there and enjoying the game. Because it's a grind. I think you play that many games in that short of a time, it's going to be a grind. But I think he's found a way to balance the competitiveness with also his just enjoying what he's doing.
Well, and I think relationship building on the team too is so important, and that really translates out there in these games when these players have really solid relationships off the court.
Oh, I agree. I really do. And I think we saw that last year with the Bucks, and with them doing the social justice campaigns that they did, them not playing a game together as a team deciding to do that. I mean, if you're not a close team, I don't know if that can work. But for the fact that they can, they could talk that through and realize that was the best move for them to make with what was going on in Kenosha, I think that shows you how close they were last year, and I think that's continued, and they've kept that core to this year.
We're talking with Justice Cleveland about the Bucks ahead of their first playoff game tomorrow afternoon against the Miami Heat. Your thoughts, are you a fan of the Bucks? Will you be watching the playoffs? Who do you think is looking good in the Eastern Conference? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Justice, looking a little closer here at the Heat, this week it was announced that Victor Oladipo will be out for the rest of the season due to an injury. So how big of a loss is this to the Heat heading into the playoffs?
Oh, I think that's huge. Oladipo is just one of those gutsy players and a good defender that would probably give some fits to the Bucks. So, yeah, having him out, and he was a guy who was a major addition to the Heat team. So I think if you're the Bucks after last year after what happened, I mean, missing somebody like that, and then another guy that gave the Bucks some problems last year was Andre Iguodala, and he's day-to-day, so suffering some injuries. So, I mean, the main guy is Jimmy Butler.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that you look at if you're the Bucks. But, yeah, Oladipo out, I mean, that helps the Bucks when they look forward to this.
So the Heat, they've used more than two dozen different starting lineups in the season. What will the starting lineups look like for the first round matchup against the Bucks? I mean, will they shake it up again?
Probably. I mean, you look at it there, and why not try a little bit of surprise when you are the Heat? I mean, that gives you credit to the Heat. I mean, that means that you have some depth. It also means you've had injuries and haven't been able to get everybody out there. But, obviously, a lot of people are going to watch for Tyler Hero, who is a Wisconsin native who had a big playoff run last year. So he's another guy that they definitely have to watch out with. But, yeah, I mean, if you can put different pieces out there, and I know they will, because that's the way it is for the NBA coaches. They, when they played last week, I'm sure both coaches weren't, showing their full hand of what to expect come the playoffs, because they knew there was a chance that they were going to play each other again. So, yeah, we'll definitely see now, once the playoffs start, that things will be a little bit different for both.
How is Mike Budenholzer doing with coaching the Bucks, and as he gets them ready for the playoffs this time around?
I've enjoyed watching Mike Budenholzer. I think he's done a great job. I think he's got that Greg Popovich pedigree that he got from coaching as an assistant at San Antonio, and has taken it to the Bucks. I think he's under the microscope, though, obviously, because of what they did the last 2 years and failing to get to the finals. When you're the best team in your conference, you're expected to make the NBA finals, and to not be able to do that brings extra pressure now. So, yes, they didn't have they won 60 and 56 games the previous 2 years. They won 46 this year, obviously playing 10 less games than they normally would. But still, I think I still look at this team, even compared to last year's team, as a team that I think has better depth and is built better for a chance to make a run to the finals.
So who else is looking good to you in the Eastern?
Well, the Eastern Conference is just stacked. It really is. I mean, it's going to be a tough battle, because all these teams, you look at Philadelphia and Brooklyn, the Bucks have performed well against those teams, but the Knicks, this is New York is celebrating because they have a Knicks team that they can actually cheer for, which hasn't happened in about 20 years. So, you go up and down, the Hawks, the Heat, the Celtics, the Wizards. I mean, these are teams that are all these teams that even the guys, teams that were in the play-in battle for the last week were good teams. So this first round's not going to be – I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for anybody. So you get down to it, it should be the Bucks and either the Nets or 76ers that – have the most chance of making it. But as we saw last year, we saw the Heat come out of nowhere and make a run. So I would not be surprised if that happens again. But I feel like the Bucks have a fighter's chance.
My guess is you just stay present, stay focused on what is right here and now in front of you, and that's the Heat.
Right, exactly. Because you can't look forward ahead, because all these teams have the potential of knocking you off in the playoff series.
Well, Justice, thank you for joining us.
No problem. It's always fun. Thanks for having me again.
Justice Cleveland is sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Ahead this hour, we discuss delays in diagnosing and treating cancer and how the pandemic has changed cancer care for oncologists and patients. Are you battling cancer? What has it been like amid COVID and your treatments? 800-642-1234. News update is next. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Steve Gotcher with a story about robots.
The University of Wisconsin-Madison has always been a leader in research and innovation. And in the last year, the campus has seen an inventive approach to food service. WPR's Norman Gilliland has the story.
If you've been to Madison sometime in the past year, chances are you've seen them. Stout strangers from a strange land, about the size of a cooler, scuttling down the sidewalk on four wheels, flag raised, dodging obstacles as they go about their business. They're called starships. They come from Estonia by way of a San Francisco-based company called Starship. There are about 35 of them in Madison. And they work for the University of Wisconsin Food Service, delivering food, mostly, to students, mostly.
Hello, here's your delivery.
Our students are coming to us, and, you know, they've grown up with Uber Eats and Eat Street and DoorDash and Grubhub and, you know, kind of all these conveniences and all of these real-time services. So when they come to us, you know, they're kind of already expecting that, right?
Peter Testori, Director of Dining and Culinary Services, probably knows more about them than anyone else in town, but even he maintains a professional distance.
Do they have names?
You know, when they first came to campus, I had dreams of putting flame stickers on there and R2-D2 stickers and naming them. And unfortunately, Starship is very strict on their branding protocols, and we're not allowed to officially name them or brand them in any way.
You might call them UROs. Unidentified rolling objects. But you know, any food-bearing entity mingling with students is bound to get drawn into a relationship.
What we've seen is that students adopt them as part of the campus community, almost kind of like a campus pet. Students petting them as they drove by, students, you know, putting hats and scarves on them when it was cold outside, taking selfies with them. It's really toward at the beginning of the school year. It's new for students and for parents, right, when they come to campus to either visit or drop their student off with us. And they take selfies and pictures with the students, too. So the one downside of that is during those times, delivery times can be a little long. Because the robots are being stopped to take a selfie with it.
And sooner or later, a relationship leads to extra favors.
Starship does have the ability to program special messages into their robots during certain holidays or other times of the year. Valentine's Day, for example, they'll wish someone a happy Valentine's Day when they drop their order off. We did a promo towards the end of last year where the robot delivered a student their cap and gown and wished them congratulations. So Starship does have the ability to put some messages in there, and not only English, but in multiple different languages as well.
Can they communicate verbally at all?
If someone is in their way, they can ask to please move. I'm working right now. So they can communicate in that way, but they can't have a verbal exchange back and forth.
How do they read the traffic lights?
you know, they use a GPS signal of sorts with sonar, radar kind of on the robots, and that's a whole lot of technical piece of the operation that I don't really understand, but they have, they're able to detect things within 6 feet around them, able to detect when a light turns green, able to detect when a car is coming, when a car is not coming. So they're 95% autonomous and 5% human driven. That's generally some of the 5% that they're human driven is when they're at a busy intersection specifically.
With so much charm going for them, it seems likely that these starships, these visitors, are here to stay.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
That was WPR's Norman Gilliland talking about the food delivery robots on the UW-Madison campus. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Steve Gotcher.
Now to cancer screenings. About 9.4 million cancer screenings have been missed nationwide in the pandemic. Screenings for breast, colon, and prostate cancer have fallen sharply. That's according to a study published recently in JAMA Oncology. Did you miss a routine cancer screening? Are you concerned about a cancer diagnosis for yourself or a loved one? It's 800-642-1234. Dr. Samir Batu treats cancer patients in oncology at Mayo Clinic Health System in Eau Claire. Dr. Batu, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
Yes, we also have Dua Eldeeb, who is a reporter for ProPublica. Dua, welcome to you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Dua, you talked with a number of people who put off scheduling screenings in the pandemic, a pandemic influence. What were some of the common themes you noticed after listening to these stories?
A lot of them were afraid. They were worried about going to hospital. They're worried about contracting COVID. And at the very beginning, they were following the guidance that was issued by national organizations that told them, you know, stay away from the hospital unless it's very serious, unless it's COVID related. So at the beginning, you know, they were doing what they were supposed to be doing. And then after that, you know, there was a lot of hesitancy in trying to get them back into the hospitals and trying to convince them that it was safe to come in.
Yeah, hesitancy to go back to doctor's office, go into clinics or hospital settings. Dr. Batu, how did you see this on your end as an oncologist?
Well, in the beginning, when the pandemic started, obviously, you know, everybody was scared and afraid to go to the hospital, especially, you know, in our cancer population. So there were reports that initially came from China and Italy that, you know, patients who have cancer diagnosis, they tend to do worse if they do get COVID-19 infection. And understandably so, our patients obviously got scared. And also a lot of, you know, other precautions were, you know, basically done from the hospital side too, saying that all those patients, you know, who don't need any emergency treatments or anything like that, they should just stay at home. So that kind of, you know, basically put everything backwards. Mm. As you mentioned at the beginning of the program, that screenings, like if you look at the report from the middle of the last year, like mammograms, the percentage decreased by about 85%, like every other screening too. Not only that, the cancer treatments per se, they also got impacted. So obviously in our area in Wisconsin, like in the Midwest, we did get a spike a little bit later than the other, you know, states in the country. But still, we, you know, did postpone some treatments, which were like, you know, maintenance treatments and things like that. But overall, like those who have the active treatments going on, you know, there's a curative intent. So we still were able to do those. But overall, yes, there was a lot of impact both on the treatment as well as the screening part, as well as the diagnosis of new cancers.
I imagine you're also seeing patients who have later stages of cancer, whose cancer has spread.
Correct. So if you look at the reports throughout the country right now, so we are seeing more and more patients which are diagnosed at later stages than usually we see during this part of the year. So that has definitely impacted, you know, those screening and also like patients who had symptoms which are suggestive of cancer. They didn't go to the doctor scared of getting the COVID-19 infection. Of course, they put it away and eventually, obviously, you know, they eventually went to the doctors and we are seeing more and more cases in more advanced stages than we usually do.
As Dr. Batu says, this is spread around the country. Is that what you found in your reporting when you talked with patients and oncologists around the country?
It was. And my reporting focused on Chicago, but I talked to oncologists across the country. And after the story ran, I heard from patients all over the United States who emailed me saying, this happened to me. This is how we lost our, you know, aunt, our mother, our uncle. And so this was something that unfortunately was widespread.
Yeah. Dr. Batu, you know, as you mentioned, breast cancer, it can be detected and treated early on. What are you telling patients in terms of getting on track on these routine screenings?
Well, as I mentioned, screenings save lives, so there's no doubt about it. And, of course, a lot of cancer patients that we diagnose, especially the breast cancer, we diagnose early only through the mammography. So, you know, and if any other cancer, like in breast cancer too, if we do diagnose them early in the, you know, stage, of course, their outcomes are much better, much, much better compared to if they are diagnosed later when we actually have palpable disease and things like that. So the mammography is really good in picking up, you know, cancers which are very, very small, which by examination, you cannot find them. So the only way you can tell them is through mammography. So my advice to all the patients who are, you know, scheduled or eligible for the screening and there's time for the screening, they should go and get their mammograms, you know, scheduled. Because, you know, in our OSC, I can talk about our system here in Mayo Clinic Health System here in Eau Claire. We are doing the routine and all kinds of, mammograms, you know, right on time. And if you need one, just, you know, talk to your provider and get it scheduled. And as I said, it does save lives.
What impact did telehealth have on cancer care, Dr. Batu?
So it's been a revolutionary, you know, during the pandemic. Our goal initially, even before the pandemic, was to go towards that, you know, telehealth. But this kind of, you know, fast forwarded this thing. And this especially is important in patients who travel from, you know, far flung areas. They have to travel like 3-4 hours. And this is really helpful in those cases. And also in other patients, too, who are reluctant in coming. So if you have to go through the, you know, imaging, you have to go through the lab results and talk about the diagnosis part where you don't need an examination of the patients. It's extremely helpful. You can actually share the screens and show them the images, show them the lab results, you know, at the comfort of your home. So that's very, very helpful. Yes, there are certain patients where, you know, examination plays a very important role for those. Of course, telehealth is not, you know, as good, but overall, telehealth has revolutionized the healthcare during this pandemic.
We're talking with oncologist Samir Batu and ProPublica reporter Dua Eldeeb. They're discussing cancer in the pandemic and what a delay in diagnosis has meant. Did you start treatment for cancer last year? Were your treatments ever postponed? What changes have you seen at the clinic or hospital where you received treatment? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Millions of people have missed routine cancer screenings in the pandemic, and researchers say this will cause a delay in cancer detection for some patients, meaning it will be more advanced when it's diagnosed. ProPublica is reporting delayed screenings and care will disproportionately hurt communities of color who already face higher cancer death rates. Dua Eldeeb is a reporter for ProPublica. She stays with us. Dr. Samir Batu treats cancer patients in oncology at Mayo Clinic Health System in Eau Claire. Still time to talk about cancer, 800-642-1234. Dua, I'm wondering if you can share a personal story that you encountered in your reporting and just how families have to band together in these times with a cancer diagnosis.
Yes, the story that I wrote really focused on one patient, Teresa Rubalcaba, who's a 40 year, 8-year-old factory worker, mother of three in Chicago. She's worked at the same factory for almost half her life. And when she started feeling symptoms last year, she ignored them because she was worried about losing her job, worried about not being able to pay the bills or falling behind on her mortgage. And she was afraid to go into the hospital. And it really took kind of this moment where she broke down in tears, where the pain was so unbearable, when her son took her to the emergency room and she was later diagnosed with stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer.
Mm. How did her oncologist, how has that relationship been with her doctor?
They've actually grown pretty close over the last few months because she is going in routinely for her chemotherapy. And her oncologist, Dr. Kosla, is seeing just such an onslaught of these advanced cases of cancer that it's really affected her. And so she has been reaching out to her patients who, if they had come in, you know, months ago or, a year ago, could really have been in a different situation. And so now Dr. Kosla, the oncologist, is working with Teresa and her family. And as we know, with cancer treatment, it's really, as you said, a ripple effect. It affects the whole family. And so in this case, her son, Sergio, graduated from college and had plans to go to medical school, and he's had to really defer those plans, put his life on hold as he helps take care of his mom.
Wow. Dr. Batu, chemotherapy treatments, are they proceeding as normal in the pandemic? What do you see there?
Yeah, as of right now, yes, they are going on as they were going pre-pandemic. So in the beginning of the pandemic, obviously, there was a certain group of patients where they were going just undergoing like maintenance treatment, like say, for example, every 2-4 weeks. So we did put that on hold. Someone whose disease was obviously advanced, but disease was under control and were undergoing chemotherapy. Some of those patients, we did put them on hold, not only from our side, also patients actually canceled because they were worried about the COVID pandemic. On the other hand, the patients who actually were going through chemotherapy for the curative intent, we never stopped that in our center over here. We actually, reassured the patients and we, told them, using all the standard precautions, how to prevent getting the COVID-19 infections. And luckily, we were able to do that in all those patients who required curative intent without any problem.
By 2030, the National Cancer Institute predicts, Dr. Batu, almost 10,000 excess deaths from breast and colorectal cancer alone. How might a late diagnosis or delayed treatment ultimately affect prognosis?
Well, like every other cancer, so I'm familiar with that report, and it's all because we delayed the screenings, and also the patients who had symptoms, concerning for cancer, they didn't seek the medical attention because of the COVID-19. So it's, like any other cancer, in fact, in all the cancer, whenever we pick up the diagnose them in early stage, so, most of them do really well. So that's the importance in cancer diagnosis. If you find them early, treat them early, they have a very, good prognosis. Unfortunately, still, if the, disease is advanced, especially the stage 4, majority of the patients are non-curative. Yes, we have treatments that will help patients prolong, life and, good life, but overall we cannot cure them, and of course the outcome is not the greatest. So that's why it's very, very important that the cancer has to be diagnosed early stage to have a better outcome.
I'm wondering, Dr. Batu, with scientists focusing so intently on finding that vaccine for COVID, was the research that they were working on for cancer breakthroughs, was that put on hold at all? Or what has the scientific community been saying about progress with cancer treatments in these times?
Well, obviously, in the beginning of the pandemic, yes, a lot of research activities did get, halted like everything else. We know over here in Mayo Clinic, we had to stop recruiting patients in the beginning for a while. So, yes, it did impact the research part as well. So, fortunately, everything is going back to where it was pre-pandemic, at least in our system. But throughout the country, also reports are coming that the things are starting to get back where it should be. But definitely in the beginning of the pandemic, the research also did get impacted by this COVID-19.
Dua, when you look at these cancer trends and the delays, what impact does this have on communities of color?
Like the pandemic, the impact is expected to hit communities of color the hardest. So as you mentioned, Black Americans are already vulnerable. They already die of all cancers combined at a higher rate than any other racial group. For Latinos, cancer is leading cause of death, and specifically breast cancer is leading cause for Latino women. In addition, you know, you look at barriers to healthcare access, concerns about losing jobs, losing insurance, or even being underemployed and having difficulty paying for deductibles or co-pays. Like Teresa, you know, essential workers often feel like they aren't able to take off work. Mm. So all of these factors disproportionately affect Black and brown communities.
We're talking with Dua Aldeeb, who's a reporter for ProPublica. Dr. Samir Batu is an oncologist for Mayo System in Eau Claire. You can join in about cancer, what you have seen for a loved one yourself in the pandemic, 800-642-1234. Dr. Batu, you know, the stress of a cancer diagnosis is formidable, but you put that on top of the stress of a pandemic and all the pressures that the pandemic has caused to families. How do you work through that with patients?
So as you mentioned, the cancer itself has a, you know, tremendous impact on the patient, not only the patient, the whole family. So, you know, it impacts the psychologically, you know, mentally, physically, financially, in every way, you know, it impacts the patient's, you know, whole life, basically. So, and on top of that, now having the COVID-19 infection, of course, it does not help. So as with any other cancer patients, you know, who are dealing with this, we always support them to get help in every way possible. So it may be treatment in any other way. We are, you know, we have support systems that can help them through this. So, you know, basically helping them navigate through the journey, whether it be cancer diagnosis or, you know, questions about the COVID-19 infections. We have a lot of support groups and, you know, whatever way we can help, we help them to navigate through this journey. And, you know, for our oncologists, it's not only a privilege, but at the same time, it's very rewarding as well.
I want to make sure we touch on vaccination, Dr. Batu. You know, is it safe for cancer patients to get the COVID vaccine?
Absolutely. So for majority of our cancer patients, it is safe. And millions of patients have got it throughout the country. A number of, you know, cancer patients have got it. Those who are on chemotherapy, they have been getting it without any trouble. Yes, there are certain group of cancer patients where we do, you know, advise them not to get a vaccination right away. So, of course, you know, talk to your provider, talk to your oncologist, see if you are, you know, candidate for it. But majority of the cancer patients, it is as safe as any other vaccination.
Dua, in the last few moments here, what hope is there for cancer patients who have received a late diagnosis?
I think the hope is that, you know, there is still treatment, there is still a way to prolong life, and that, you know, there has been a lot of progress made in cancer treatment and research. And, you know, the first step is just getting to the doctor's office, going to the clinic, and then seeing what can happen next.
Dua and Dr. Batu, thank you for joining us.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
Dua Aldeeb is a reporter for ProPublica. Dr. Samir Batu is an oncologist in Eau Claire. And for disclosure, the Mayo Clinic in Eau Claire is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Just ahead, we talk about how the pandemic has inspired career and lifestyle changes. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.